Physical game spending is halved since 2021, which isn't great in the long term. Plus, the Video Game History Foundation is opening its archives online this coming week. Tonight is January 26, 2025, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is everyone, Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bobby? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O'Kay says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash. Later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
It has been a week. That's what SSJ winner Matt Chet says in chat. Pod Culture says it's still January. It still can be a week. It's the first week. Hello, everybody, and welcome to It's Been a Week edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on this Sunday night at the end of a week and the start of the next week, thank you so much. We do try to tape this show live each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with us directly, and I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. But like I said, have said before, we are a podcast as well. We started off as a podcast almost 20 years ago, and we're still a podcast. And so if you can't be here on Sunday nights, I completely understand. Our Discord server is where you can talk to us throughout the week. VogNetwork.com/Discord. It's a very low traffic server. We don't ping you. So you can come join us and you can suggest topics for the upcoming weeks. Some of the stuff we're talking about tonight was posted in that channel. And you can also talk back about things that happened earlier this week. And I do want to mention at the beginning here, yes, it has been a week, a big week here, especially here in the United States. Don't really want to get into the details of it, but I do want you to take care of yourself. And if you feel like you are getting overwhelmed, go play a video game and, you can keep up with what's going on, but if you get overwhelmed, there is nothing wrong with going away and playing a video game or doing something else. So, please take care of yourself and then take care of those around you, but I'm worried about you the most. So, Pod Culture says to heck with hogwash and gaming news. And there's a reason for that. And it's actually good stuff because what I did on Monday, January 20th, instead of watching television and watching things going on, is I finally have re-entered the world of where I can celebrate Father's Day. And no, I don't have a baby boy or I don't have a baby human. Let's put it that way. So I finally, after almost 3 years, 3 years ago, I lost my last cat. So I got two cats. They were named Pixel and Vector in 2001. Actually, like a couple weeks after 9/11 was when I got those cats. Vector, who was a Seal Point Siamese male, passed away just after his 14th birthday, I want to say. So he made it to 14 years. And Pixel, who was a female Burmese, she made it to almost her 21st birthday. So she made it all the way to like 2022, being born in the middle of 2001. So really long time. And I was ready the following week, but we had some kitchen renovations that we had to be doing. And we're like, it's going to be easy to do that when we don't have cats in the house. And then my mother passed away in the summer of 2022 in the middle of our kitchen renovation. So we had a half-renovated kitchen. All we had to do left was paint the cabinets and the dining room and do some of that stuff. And we didn't wind up actually doing that until last month. So, you know, December of 2024, if you're looking at the timeline here, we finally got the kitchen, all that stuff painted. And a couple weeks ago, I made a call to the place that I was going to be getting cats from, and they're like, they're going to be ready in a week and a half. And we went to a D&D, it was called Dice and Diversion, so it is technically a D&D convention, but tabletop board gaming convention over the weekend. So we were like, we can't pick them up until Monday, which we both, both my wife and I had off from work because it was Martin Luther King Day here in the U.S., not because of anything else. The holiday was actually Martin Luther King Day. And we went up and picked up two brand new kittens. So I am now back in the Cat Dad Club. And I've been posting pictures of them on Blue Sky. But we actually have video of them that I took because, you know, in true old person fashion, I pulled out the camcorder that I used to film a lot of the on-site videos that I do for Vogue, the same one that I take to conventions and things like that, and use that to get get some video of the kitties their first time here at the house. So I have two new kittens. Their names are App and Widget, to completely keep with the computer terminology. My parents started it. Their cats were named BIOS and Icon. I had a cat named Cursor growing up. So we have App and Widget. App is a 4-month-old Seal Point Siamese male. And Widget is a foreign white Balinese female at 5 months old. These are, and I believe Tiger Claw in our Discord when I posted pictures of them was like, ooh, Siamese, very rare. Sure, Siamese are rare, but what's interesting is if you look at clickbait articles on the internet about the rarest Siamese family of cat, what's the rarest breed, like on that like top eight, they were like, yeah, number seven is the Balinese, just in general. So a Balinese is essentially a long-haired Siamese. That's what a Balinese cat is. Then, like, you go, like, number two rarest is what's called the foreign white Siamese, is the second most rarest cat in the Siamese family. Foreign white is basically, Seal Point is the essentially refers to the color of the area around the face of the cat. So a Seal Point is kind of more of like a brown point on a white body. And that's what a lot of, like, you've seen a lot of Seal Point Siamese in television and movies and things like that. And a Balinese is a long-haired version of the Siamese. So you can have a Seal Point Siamese, a long-haired version of that Siamese cat. Number one rarest is a foreign white Balinese, because Balinese didn't exist. Breeders created them in, like, the 60s, and the foreign white color didn't exist until the 90s. And so to get a foreign white Balinese, you need to have, like, the perfect set of parents at the perfect time to get a one of them. So it's really Widget, the girl, who is the actual rare one of the two. We have them confined to our board game room right now. And I've got video of, we took a lot more video than what I'm showing here. The App, our little Siamese boy, is very flirtatious in the sense that he was out of the cage immediately. He was in our laps that night. He's a little purr monster. He's also a little terror. Widget, our little girl, has not actually let us touch her yet. So, and we've had him now for 6 days. So, you know, she gets close to us. She plays. She's, you know, licked our hands and stuff, but we have never actually gotten to pet her yet. So we're hoping at some point we're going to break that barrier, but we haven't yet. But she's absolutely, they're both eating, drinking. They're using the litter box. Trust me, we know. They're playing. They're willing to get close to us. They just don't want to be touched, or she doesn't want to be touched. He will just jump in your lap and, you know, purr and fall asleep and stuff like that. So I finally have two kittens. They will probably get the run of the house in a week or two, which means that my background will probably never look the same because they're going to destroy half of what I have in my normal background that you see here in behind me. And so S. Jeremy Matt says, yeah, it will take some time. Some cats go into shutdown mode in a new place. It's awesome that they're eating all that stuff just fine. She was in shutdown mode for about 12 hours, maybe. She was out playing with us that night. The video I'm showing is actually from the second night. So this was actually from the night after we got them, and she's, you know, playing and right there with us, and App was with us in the beginning. Like the boy, he was in my lap that night. Like 6 hours later, he was ready to just, you know, purr and sit in my lap and get pet and everything. So, and the Breakman says, some cats don't like to be picked up. Don't take offense. It's not being picked up. It's literally, we can't touch her. we can't pet her body. She does not let us pet her body yet. So, which is great because I get to take him to the vet tomorrow. So somehow I'm going to have to get her in her carrier to get to the vet. We've got her carrier sat out. She walks into it and kind of sits in there and stuff. So she's used to it. So hopefully I'll be able to coax her in there without having to actually touch her. And then she'll hate the carrier for the rest of her life. But right now she doesn't hate the carrier. And Questbuster says, meanwhile, Widget is gaining levels in Sparkly Combat. The toy that we got later in the week, she's a little murder kitty. She actually growls at it. And the Breakman says they're playing together, which is great. They cuddle together, too. I've actually got pictures on my Blue Sky of them cuddling together because they came from the same place. They've known each other for like a month or two. The place we got them from said, no, they're friends. She's going to be a very much an alpha female. He kind of just rolls with it. He like nothing bothers him. He just does whatever, you know, he's like, whatever, you can be the alpha female, whatever, you can run the house. So it's going to be a fine dynamic between them. We're just trying to get her to trust us. So that's what I did mostly this week. So if you've asked me if I played any video games this week, the answer is no, I haven't. I take that back. I haven't. I played a little bit of Picross one night in bed, but I haven't. If I wanted to play with something, I went down into the room that they're in because they are locked in like one room right now, and playing with toys and bonding and all that stuff. So, welcome to the Voice of Cats Network, and that was my talk about kittens and App and Widget. So you won't see they should not ever appear here on the podcast. I always close the door. I've had a habit of, for the first 17 years, I had at least one cat in the house, and I always made sure that she was no longer in the room. I would have to fish her out to fish Pixel out before I started. I think like there were like three shows where they hid well enough that I didn't know they were in here until the show started. And they were back in the internet radio days. They were never on the Twitch days. Usually I try to get them out and make sure that they're not in here. So unfortunately you won't hear them or see them make a cameo live here on the show, but, I get video and you can follow me on Blue Sky. I am at BobbyBlackWolf.com on Blue Sky. And that is where I am posting pictures. And maybe if they're, the video, component, which they have video now, but they've got, I think Skylight Social is the name of the video app that's trying to make a TikTok-like experience on top of the Blue Sky Network. Maybe I'll be posting video over there as well. So no kitty cam. I'm sorry, Pod Culture. I don't do that. I don't want things to be too distracting because remember, this is an audio podcast about video games. People who are subscribing to this podcast don't want to hear me talk about podcasting. They don't want to hear me talk about streaming. And they don't want to hear things that really aren't video games. Like doing this, I think everybody should be fine with. If you're not, let me know. I apologize. But mostly we're here to talk video games, and having a cat come up and completely derail the conversation, that's not something I personally want to do. I know other places do it, and it's great, and it's awesome, and we love it, and that's great. But I'm going to try to keep the focus because I only get 1 hour a week. And so I'm going to make that 1 hour count. So thank you so much for the congratulations. It was I get to go back to the vet tomorrow. Last time I was at the vet, it was a very sad day. And tomorrow, hopefully, I will not be in pain from scratches. But it's a good day to get back to the vet and get them checked out. All right. So let's actually talk about the video games and video game news and stuff that's going on. So this is kind of a sad sad thing for a certain segment of people, which there are probably more of these than you're expecting. And it's people who have older computers, older PCs, which older PC games work just fine on older PCs. And there's a lot of people that can't afford new PCs. And as the price of PC parts and PCs go up because of the taxes that are going to be levied on a lot of imports coming in, you're going to see less and less people be able to afford newer PCs. And so a lot of people are still on 32-bit PCs. And Engadget reports that EA's Origin PC client has officially reached the end of the line. The gaming company had previously announced its plans to rebrand the Origin app for desktop players back in 2020 and began rolling out the new EA app in 2022. However, Origin will be completely shuttered on April 17th, 2025, as Microsoft ends support for 32-bit software. Anyone still using Origin will need to swap over to the EA app before that date. For those PC players that have not migrated over the EA app, the company has an FAQ explaining the latest system requirements. The EA app runs on 64-bit architecture and requires a machine using Windows 10 or Windows 11. Although Microsoft would actually prefer that you're using Windows 11, because Windows 10, they're not going to support after October. And they really want you on Windows 11. They really do. If you're simply downloading the EA app on a current machine, players will not need to re-download their games. And if you have cloud saves enabled, all your data should transfer without any additional steps. So you should actually just back up your game saves if you can somewhere else. So mods also don't automatically make the switch, and EA recommends players check with mod creators about transferring to the EA app. So here's the thing. If you've got a recent machine, this is fine. And honestly, it's going to work better. 64-bit apps work better on current machines than 32-bit apps do. But because we don't buy physical games, and even then, PC, even if you had a physical game, you still have to talk to an authentication service. So basically, because of DRM, if you have a 32-bit Windows 7 machine that works just fine for playing that old version of The Sims 3 that you've played, spent so many hours in, and you have so many mods for it, and you have so much DLC for it, and it worked just fine on your Windows 7 machine, and you've played it for so long, Origin's going to be shut down on April 17th. You cannot load that game anymore, even though that game still works perfectly fine on your setup. Because the DRM server is going away, you can't play it anymore. This is why the game preservation is not always about the games that came out in the 70s and the games that came out in the 90s. It's a lot easier to play games made in the 70s and 80s and 90s than it is to play games made in the 2000s and 2010s. And a lot of that's because of digital rights management. And you may think, well, you know, buying digital is great. Now I don't have to touch anything. Like Breakman says, like, I have to touch it with my hands. That's too much work. And I know he's actually joking. But there's no reason that The Sims 2, which is also a 32-bit game, can't be played on a Windows 7 98 or a Windows 7 machine. Except now, in order to play it, you can't, because you don't have access to the DRM server anymore. So even though the game would work just fine, you lose access to it. Unless you buy a brand new PC with Windows 11, you spend thousands of dollars, maybe just $1,000, because if you only care about Sims 2 or Sims 3, you don't need a top-of-the-line graphics card, although NVIDIA is phasing out a lot of their cheaper graphics card lines. But you would need to upgrade your entire PC to be able to play a game that still should play perfectly fine. All because EA no longer wants to support you playing the game there. Now, obviously, there are, for people who are savvy enough with the high seas, obviously we'd be able to get around this, and those games would be absolutely playable on Windows 7 just fine. However, the people who are savvy enough to do that probably aren't still running a 32-bit only machine on Windows 7. They are probably at least on Windows 10 now or on Linux, because if you're savvy enough to do that, you're savvy enough to have a modern operating system and a modern computer. So even though that's an option, the people who are probably still playing Sims 2 on a 32-bit PC that works just fine for them aren't the type of people to try to go find a crack and worry about implementing the crack from online. And ZenMonkey11 says, I'm 64-bit with Windows 11, but that still sucks. It's only a matter of time before that's outdated too. I mean, ask your friends with Apple products. because what Apple does is they just say, yeah, this new version of the OS just doesn't run. You can't upgrade to it. Now, you can use other tools and upgrade to that version of the OS just fine, but Apple won't let you do it. You have to circumvent it. And Microsoft does the same thing. We can sit here and talk about the TPM chip that's in motherboards and blah, blah, blah. So, like, you have to have a specific chip on your motherboard for Windows 11 to install. So Microsoft is also extremely guilty of the same thing. But Apple does phase out older machines after about 6 years. So if the machine is 6 years old, I think it's 6 years, then you can't upgrade it anymore. Like, you can't get the new version of the OS, and then suddenly apps will stop supporting, just like this. EA is not going to support Windows 7 anymore, so now you can't play any EA games on Windows 7. But and the same thing happens on Apple, whereas, like, the new version of Chrome will only work on this version of Mac OS up, and if your machine is too old, then you can't use it anymore. You can't use Chrome anymore because you can't install it unless you upgrade the OS, and Apple won't let you upgrade the OS. Ask me how I know this. It's because I have a top-of-the-line MacBook Pro from work from my last job, and they didn't want it back because they bought it for me in 2014, and I haven't been able to update it since 2020. So I think it was about 6 years. And it was like top-of-the-line $4,000 MacBook Pro when it was bought for me. And it's basically a paperweight now. So pour one out for your 32-bit homies wanting to play The Sims 2 or The Sims 3 or any of those EA games that work just fine on 32-bit Windows 7 machines. They no longer are going to work on those machines after April 17th. Now, I mentioned physical games earlier, and this was the story that was brought up in our Discord about that makes me sad personally, because I am a big believer of keeping physical media around, because then it can't be taken away from you. And unfortunately, the game industry and the movie industry are very much moving towards, no, you don't actually, you can't watch this whenever you want. You watch it when we let you. And a lot of people who are younger are just fine with this, because why should I put too much stuff on my shelf? Like, I don't have the shelf space for that. And, you know, why should I have all this stuff on my shelf when I could just, like, press a button and it starts playing? I go to Netflix and I want to watch Interstellar. I can just go hit a button and I can watch it on Netflix. Yay! Until it's not there anymore. And then you can't watch it. But that's fine. But Video Games Chronicle reports that U.S. spending on physical video games has more than halved since 2021, according to new data from market research firm Circana. Player spending habits have steadily migrated to digital for more than a decade, way more than a decade. Steam started it. Driven by faster internet speeds, the emergence of online marketplaces on consoles, and live service games funded by microtransactions. All boo things. Well, I mean, faster internet speeds are great, but not everybody has faster internet speeds. If you live in a city in the United States, sure, you have fast internet speeds. If you don't live in the city, then you might not have faster internet speeds. Circana Data supplied executive director Matt Piscatella said this week, suggests that the migration towards digital has accelerated since the pandemic. According to a graph showing the last 25 years of U.S. video game software spend, physical games have been cut in more than half since 2021 and are now more than 85% below the 2008 peak. Overall content spend, including physical and digital, including subscriptions and microtransactions, has increased since 2019, according to the same data. It's worth noting that a key reason for the acceleration towards digital games during 2024 will have a weaker-than-usual Nintendo Switch release schedule, which usually props up a significant portion of physical game sales. So yes, the people who buy physical games the most are people buying games for their kids, because it's way easier to gift a physical game to a niece, a nephew, something like that, than it is to gift a digital game to someone. So people who are older than me, they would prefer, they know their grandniece, grandnephew, or whatever, their grandchild really loves Nintendo Switch games. They will go to Walmart, buy a Nintendo Switch game, wrap it up, give it to the kid, and that's what a lot of Nintendo Switch sales are. They don't do that as much for Xbox and PlayStation. They do, but a lot more kids have the Nintendo Switch. While the overall video game trend is increasingly migrating to digital, it's not even across platforms or game series. For example, in Europe last year, overall digital share was up 68%, up from 60%. However, Xbox's digital share was 75%, up from 70%, while PlayStation 5's was up 64%, up from 55%, and Nintendo remained flat at 22%. And while more Europeans bought Astrobot as a physical box game, Warhammer 40K Space Marine sales were overwhelmingly digital. It was because Astrobot? More kids would play it, so more grandparents bought Astrobot on a disc for their kids. Grandparents aren't going to buy Warhammer 40K for their kids, most likely. Like, some will, obviously. But overall, Astrobot is more gift-friendly, let's just say. It was a quiet year for new releases all around, with only 6 new games in the European top 20 for 2024. In 2023, there were 10. In fact, sales of new releases were down 21% in 2024 compared with new releases in 2023. That's because all those games that got delayed because of working from home and all that stuff, they all finally released in 2023. Remember when we're like, 2023 is like one of the best years in gaming. Oh my God, it was so great. And then they laid everybody off that made the games. And so we're not getting as many big titles right now because they all got laid off. There's less people making big games than there were 3 years ago. Esther and Matt says, data capture the problem as well. Get rid of physical and you're going over your cap. You have to budget it unpleasantly. I have had to do that many times. I had, and I'm using past tense because I am, because my situation has changed. I no longer have a data cap, but I pay extra every month for the privilege of not having a data cap. But I have a 1 terabyte, I had a 1 terabyte data cap. And because we stream a lot, my wife streamed a lot. And these games, especially like the AAA games, are 100 gigs, 150 gigs. Like, that's 1/10 of my data cap just to download that game. And so you have to budget accordingly. And I would basically look, because it would reset on the first of the month. At the end of the month, I would look. I'm like, okay, how much of my data have I used? All right, I can now go down and download this update, put this game, get this game from Game Pass, and basically get up close to that data cap. And you know, I was like, okay, great. You know, that's when I could get things. Or I would say, well, you know, I can preload this now, which was actually good. Like, some games that like came out like in the first week of the month, they were like, oh, you can preload it now. And I'm like, okay, I will preload it here this month. That way I'm not using next month's data cap on it. So, and the reason I don't have a data cap anymore is the reason is that we had cable TV. And so I watched most of my TV over cable TV. And then when, so there were a lot of regulations removed about using third-party devices to watch cable TV. There were regulations, it was called Cable Card. And back in like 2009, 2010, the FCC had a regulation that all cable companies needed to support third-party devices using the Cable Card standard. Well, in 2019, when the people who were in charge of the country at the time were very much into removing onerous regulations, that's one of the regulations they removed. And so finally, my cable company upgraded our network, obsoleted my cable devices, said, oh, we can't fix that because we no longer support them. We're no longer required by the government to support them. So would you like to buy our box? And I'm like, no. So I dropped cable television, wound up getting Fubo, which is over the internet. And I'm like, well, now that I'm going to be watching TV over the internet, I now pay like $15 a month extra to get an unlimited data cap. And that's how they got me. But my cable, my bill to the cable company is way, it's like a third of what it was. But now I pay Fubo what I used to pay the cable company for TV. So I'm not saving any money. I'm just reprioritizing things. The data caps are a thing. Download speeds are a thing. Because yes, you may have fiber, but if the way that your neighborhood was wired for fiber, if everybody's streaming 4K, like in your neighborhood, it may make your stuff slower, so you have to wait a long time to download the game, things like that. So I am a big fan of physical games, and I am sad that we are probably not going to see physical games in about 5 years. What we will see is they will still sell collector's editions with your figurines and your steelbook, and what they'll have inside is what they do for PC games now is you get a code that you put in on your console or your PC, and it downloads the game from the internet. That's what we're going to see. We're going to, I fully believe that because the consumers have spoken, we've all spoken. Digital games are great. This is what we're doing. We're not buying physical games anymore. Companies have discontinued their Blu-ray players. You're soon not going to be able to buy writable Blu-ray discs. That's going away. They've already stopped manufacturing Blu-ray writers for PCs. So you can actually burn Blu-ray discs on your PC. We're going to start seeing people just not put things out on Blu-ray. Like, you're going to see less movies on Blu-ray and less TV shows on Blu-ray. You already see it. Because why should you, when they can charge you for access, why would they give it to you? The Breakman says stores like Meijer has shrank their in-store floor space for video games. I mean, everybody has. Best Buy has. It's a lot. It's, here's cards to go buy things. Here's eShop cards. And here's the console, and here's socks. That's what they sell now, like Nintendo socks. But games, no, not really. Questbuster says, it's an all-digital future, but I still buy physical for as long as possible when I can. And that's what I do. I'm going to continue to do that. And then it won't be something I'll be able to do anymore. And I will be sad. But I have a whole bunch of boxes of PC games from the early to mid, from the 90s and 2000s behind me. I'm pointing to something people can't see. But they're down there. But then we stopped buying PC games. Physical. And everybody was okay with that. One of the companies they are kind of a company, but whatever. One of the areas they're trying to preserve a lot of this physical media about video games is an entity I really like a lot, the Video Game History Foundation. And Video Games Chronicle reports that the Video Game History Foundation is making its digital library system available to the public for the first time next week. The first public version of the library will launch on January 30th. Offering digital access to some of the Foundation's exciting special collections. The Foundation said in a statement, quote, after years of collecting, cataloging, and digitizing video game history materials, the Video Game History Foundation is finally opening the virtual doors to its library wherever you are, unquote. So they teased with high-res images featuring Donkey Kong Arcade Flyer artwork and Final Fantasy VII artwork. Although it says it plans to save the details for the big premiere, the Foundation says that its library includes, quote, never-before-seen game development materials and artwork, press kits, and promo materials from iconic video games, unquote. It also says it will feature access to more than 1,500 out-of-print video game magazines, which will be fully text-searchable. The Foundation was set up in 2017 by game preservationist and historian Frank Cifaldi. Since then, it's been building an extensive collection of video game-related material, with the aim being to catalog, digitize, and preserve the history of video games. The nonprofit Foundation relies on donations to build its archives. They say, quote, thanks to your support, we've built a powerful tool for video game history research. We can't wait for you to get your first look at what we've been up to, unquote. So this is essentially doing what the Internet Archive does as well. And it's always good to have multiple archives. So this is not like an Internet Archive versus Video Game History Foundation. But the Internet Archive also has a lot of these video game magazines you can find like every issue of Nintendo Power on the Internet Archive. And it's fully available there. But what this is this is a library. Now, notice we're talking about flyers, magazines, artwork. We're not talking about the games themselves. There is an extensive video game collection of actual games that the Video Game History Foundation has in its library, and they want people to be able to study them. However, in order to do that, you have to, as a researcher, physically go to where they are located, which I can't remember exactly what state they're located in, but you have to physically go to their library, and then you can check it out, and you can, you know, look at it there. The reason they can do this with books and magazines is because there is already protection for libraries from the United States Copyright Office and from the Patent Office. There is already protection for libraries to have things like this searchable and available online. There are protections for them to have it in being able to be checked out. There are already protections for academics to be able to use online materials like this for books and magazines. There isn't one for video games. Now, they've tried. In October, the Video Game History Foundation criticized the U.S. Copyright Office's refusal to grant exemption that would allow researchers to remotely access out-of-print video games. The Software Preservation Network, supported by the foundation, had petitioned the U.S. Copyright Office for an exemption that would let libraries and archives provide digital remote access to video games so researchers could access them without having to visit their physical premises. To make these games accessible remotely, libraries and archives would have to break the copy protection on the games, but current anti-circumvention rules in the Digital Millennium Copyright Act prevent this. The U.S. Copyright Office concluded that it would not grant an exemption in the DMCA, meaning remote access remains prohibited. And we talked about this when it happened, and I believe it's once every 3 years they can petition, I believe. So we will now have to wait until, because that was 2024, it's going to be 2027 before they can try again to get remote access to their digital games for researchers. So Esther and Matt says, Oakland, California is where the Video Game History Foundation is. And they do have a physical location. Researchers can go and peruse and utilize the library like an actual library, but you have to physically be there to actually play the games. The thing also that's different about what they're doing is the fully searchable on the magazines, because they have a whole lot of magazines. Like, yes, Nintendo Power, great. Yes, they have them all. But a lot of other game magazines that you probably never heard of, because there was a huge game magazine boom in the 90s and the 2000s. Huge. Like, they were every, like, it was, I could go to a bookstore, because we went to bookstores, and go to the magazine rack and just sit there and flip through game magazines. And now you go and there's like maybe a magazine about Minecraft or Roblox, maybe like one. And then that's it, because magazines have fallen out of favor because everybody's online. We are kind of in a, we're kind of entering a dark ages. Believe it or not. And I've mentioned this before, because things that were created just a few years ago might be lost forever. Whereas things that were created 40 years ago is in an archive somewhere. And I remember hearing 25 years ago when, you know, people were just starting to get on the internet, 30 years ago when people were just starting to get on the internet, be careful what you do. Because once on the internet, always on the internet. And there are things that I wish were still on the internet. There are pictures of people that used to be on the internet that are no longer on the internet that I wish were there. There are pictures of me that I was not smart enough to save locally to my computer that I wish I had access to, and I don't have them. They were on the internet. Once on the internet, always on the internet? Nope. They're gone. I mean, how many podcasts have you wished that you could, you know, go back and listen to, and they're gone? Because once on the internet, not necessarily always on the internet. And so we're going to enter probably a dark ages when a lot of this, you know, if a lot of this technology, especially if like one of the cloud services crash and like lose the data and there's not good backups or anything, or as people shut things down, you know, maybe they had a great webcomic. Once the website goes down, and if nobody thought to save it, it's not like some library is going to be able to say, well, no, we have it. We have the book right here. We save the newspapers. No, it's just gone. And you see that already, like when Joystick. Remember Joystick? Don't you wish you could go read some of those articles that Joystick wrote? They're gone. But if it was a magazine, it would probably in the Video Game History Foundation. It would have been completely searchable, text searchable, and you can see a lot of that stuff that maybe you missed out the first time. Podcoach says we don't learn our lessons. Remember all the shows that were missing episodes now because tapes were erased and not saved. And also Podcoach says the ones that came with preview discs are the best. I say I have a whole bunch of those preview discs, and those were really good. And I think, and those are also preserved at the Video Game History Foundation. A lot of them have those demo discs and stuff like that. So we are going to take a quick music break. And then we will maybe somebody wants to call in or something. Basically, what we do is if you want to call in, we haven't done calls for a while, and we probably won't tonight. But we used to have a toll-free number that people could call in back when people used phones to call into AM radio talk shows, which is what this is kind of like. But if you're in our Discord server, vognetwork.com/Discord, you can hop into the Green Room voice chat channel and talk about anything going on in the video game industry. And you can do that during this music break that's coming up that you won't hear on the podcast, but you will hear here. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show. You're on the Voice Geeks Network, twitch.tv/vognetwork.
Listening to the Bobby Blackwolf Show. Woohoo! It's a number one.
I thought Chatterbox Video Game Radio was number one.
I'm number one. The heck with everybody else. You're listening to the great radio show. Now have a rotten day.
Speaking of lost media, Chatterbox Video Game Radio, that podcast, I don't think you can get its archives anymore. So that was a while ago. That was Charles Martinet actually doing a bumper for this show back in E3 2006. That was in line for the Wii when I was at E3, and in line for the Wii. And Charles Martinet was very gracious. He knew exactly that he was doing a bumper for a podcast, and he was so amazing about it. I actually met him again like many years later, and I told him, I'm like, you're not going to remember this, but you did this, and it, you know, that like 1 minute meant a lot to me recording that for us. And he's like, no, I don't remember, but that it was my pleasure. I'm very glad that you had that and all that stuff. So he was very, very sweet, very, very amazing. I think he's still doing kind of like, he's no longer the voice of Mario, but he is like still doing the fun convention appearances and doing things like that. So Esther and Matt says the second Charles Martinet promo. So he only did one promo, but because back then he also said what the name of the radio station was, which is not the network anymore, I basically just cut that out. So it's still like the full version still says All Games Radio. But I was able to make a clean edit and edit it down because Vogue didn't exist back then. But, yeah, that's thank him. Thank you so much for that, Charles Martinet. I hope retirement is treating you well. One of the things that was said actually in chat right before I went in, went into break, was Questbuster about the games that have been lost. Says who knows how many games from early mobile phones in the 2000s are permanently gone. Only games like Doom RPG managed to survive thanks to very determined fans. And there were a lot of mobile games made for flip phones in the early 2000s. I almost worked for a company that made those games. The company was based here in Atlanta. And it was actually like run, like the CEO was somebody who worked for Sega Sports for the Dreamcast and actually helped launch. He was a project manager for a lot of the Sega Sports games that launched on the Dreamcast. So this is like your NFL 2K and things like that. And he worked on that side, on the visual concept side. And you open up a mobile game studio because flip phones and having games on a flip phone was a hot thing. And their big game that they did was a Punch-Out-like game with Snoop Dogg. It was called Snoop Dogg Boxing. And I think it even had like some like Snoop Dogg, some Snoop Dogg tunes in it in, you know, full flip phone fashion. But it played like Punch Out. And the thing is, like, I was thinking about it and I'm like, I had it. I actually bought it. I had it on my phone, which I actually probably still have that phone. So I bet if I like found the charger and charged it up, I might be able to get it. But, when you look for it, I had to like very much search for it, but I actually did find this game, and it no longer exists. So I'm gonna try to open it here. There it is. Yep. So check this out. This was Snoop Dogg Boxing, and it's gone. It's lost media. You wouldn't have known about this if I hadn't told you about it, and it no longer exists. But this is, I almost work for the company that made this game, and it's gone. There's a lot like this, and like a lot of 3DS titles are gone. Xbox 360 games are gone because people don't, like a lot of companies don't save the source code. Even big companies, when Kingdom Hearts had to be remade, when we got Kingdom Hearts 1.5, they literally had to remake it. They literally, because Square Enix didn't keep the source code. They didn't keep any of that. So they basically had to rebuild the game. And that happens a lot, especially like if a company goes under, they don't keep the source code. Back in the 80s or whatever, you would have, you know, developers take discs home. And then we're finding this a lot now. This is what a very interesting phenomenon that's happening now is like people who were game developers in the early 80s. Unfortunately, they're old. They pass away. Their kids, or whoever's the executor of their estate, find all of these discs in the attic of their while they're going through their parents' stuff. And it turns out it's like source code for a game that, you know, nobody's thought of for like 30 years. Or we found the Video Game History Foundation will get contact and be like, hey, we have this like little board that has like prototype this on it. And it turns out that like somebody just brought home an Atari 2600 prototype game that they were working on. And then the Video Game History Foundation gets it and dumps the code and all that stuff. And they'll try to recreate things. But it's what we're finding now is that a lot of people took that source code home. Nobody took the Kingdom Hearts source code home because it's huge. That was because all the assets and all the art and everything. And so, like I said, that's why we're going into a lost media area because, you know, we're more likely to find lost source code to something or something that we don't know of from 1981 than we are from 2001. And Questbuster says source code for Panzer Dragoon Saga for the Saturn is also missing. So if there was ever going to be a remake of that classic, it would have to be rebuilt. And they had to rebuild Kingdom Hearts 1. Kingdom Hearts 2, they didn't have to rebuild. I believe it's just Kingdom Hearts 1. They literally had to like rebuild everything. I think like they were able to get like the voices and like they were able to get the files off the disc that they could for like some of the assets, but like the code, they had to rewrite the whole code. They probably had to remake some assets because they didn't have the original 3D models and things like that. SJR Matt says, yeah, someone came out with the remaster of the Wing Commander 2 Roland MT-32 soundtrack. They were able to put everything together by reaching out to the original folk who made the soundtrack to put it together. And yeah, I've actually, because George the Fat Man Singer, that's his name. He calls him, he's not fat. I've actually met him, almost interviewed him for the podcast, but we had a really long conversation. I want to say a GDC back when I was going to Game Developer Conference. He did some of the soundtrack to Wing Commander 1 and then also the theme to Wing Commander 2. So he's still got kind of his legacy of that. They were able to get basically you can also rip out the actual files like the MT32 stuff. And then they were able to put it back together and, you know, use some modern audio equipment to get it. No, I found that. So somebody had done that for Wing Commander 2 and Wing Commander Academy, I want to say. And there's on Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you or you can buy it. I believe it's on Bandcamp. So if you want to actually buy it and support them with more than, you know, half of a cent per 1,000 streams or whatever Spotify is playing, you can find that. And it's got it all on there. So it's not really easy to listen to because it's like, you know, here's like a minute and a half of like sad music and a minute and a half of incidental music and stuff like that. But I went through the Wing Commander 2 and I'm like, yep, remember that. Cause I was addicted to Wing Commander 2. Anyway, coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California, and they talk about games for much, much longer than we do. And I like to check in with them to see what they're going to be talking about tonight and what they remember or what they're hoping, maybe what they're looking for in the Video Game History Foundation if they're going to go through the library. Sacramento, are you there?
I am here, Bobby. How are you?
I am doing well. I'm doing much better because I have new furry friends in the house.
I know. I missed the video at the beginning because I was out trying to get the last of our flowers planted for the Pikmin challenge.
Yeah.
And I'm about 500 short, but Alan said he'll take care of it during the show. But
we haven't left the house, as you can tell.
Well, I figured it was still snowy situation out there.
Yeah.
So because, you know, I'd noticed, I was like, they haven't planted any flowers. Then I realized, oh, yeah, it like snowed out there. So they probably just can't.
It's really,
really cold. Yeah.
No, it's just really cold. So it did snow out here. It was really interesting. Like, yeah, we're talking about the weather because it was what we call an upside down snow. It snowed south of us, but not here. We did not get snow this week. We got snow a couple weeks ago, but we got no snow this week. But like downtown Atlanta, which is only like 20 miles south. Yeah, they got a good dusting. They got some good snow.
Interesting. Interesting. So. Well, the Pikmin challenge will be taken care of. Unfortunately, I did not get to see the video of the kitties because I was only listening to my AirPods. So I was like, oh, man, I'm missing video right now. Oh, good. I get a replay. I was trying to get it
to show up. There it is. There they are.
You know, as a VOG Network subscriber on Twitch, I would get to see the video later on anyway. Oh, adorable. Oh, my gosh, Bobby. She is so cute playing with that toy. Widget's a female, right?
Yeah, okay, Widget's a female. The all white cat is a female, and the Siamese is a male. That's App. But yeah,
I love it. I love it. I hope I get to meet them when I come out there. Mm-hmm. Maybe before Dragon Con.
Maybe
if rumors are to be believed, I may be out there a little early this year, and I think y'all can put it together. But hoping that'll happen. Let's say around my birthday. I'm gonna take a birthday trip out there.
Awesome. So that's also why I haven't left the house, because why would you leave the house when they're here? And they can't leave the room. So, you know, but soon they will.
Yeah, and it has us thinking. You know, obviously, I've been very open about the fact that we lost Mr. Smush, unfortunately, a couple weeks ago. But you know, for obvious reasons, we're already talking about, okay, what's that next plan look like? And we're trying to figure it out. I think Alan is leaning towards, and I'll let him make the decision, but I think he's leaning more towards getting an older cat that is around Cheddar's age so that they can kind of grow old together. And then, you know, once they have both moved on from this world, start over with some kitties.
And that's what we did. We got two at the same time because Pixel and Vector, who I had before, I also got at the same time. And they were about a month apart in age. So...
Yeah, we were in that weird situation where the prior landlord would only let us have one cat. And I'm actually not sure if we even actually officially had that cat, but what are they going to do now? I always said we're not going to be able to get another cat besides Mr. Smush until we move. And then we bought this house and enter Cheddar. So that's how that happened.
So the other stuff I was talking about is, you know, I know I talked about like the Video Game History Foundation, where we, you know, they're going to put a lot of their digital library online, which is a lot of the magazines, artwork, games, stuff. Is there something you would go into? Is there anything in there that you would probably look up first? Magazines and maybe game dev diaries or anything like that. Unfortunately, no games themselves.
See if I could remember the Nintendo Power issue that had my question that I submitted, but it didn't have my name. But it was definitely, and who knows?
But do you remember the question?
I do. It was, how do I get it was that game on the NES, Legacy of the Wizard, one of the hardest games I've ever played in my life. And it was basically like, how do you collect even the first crown? Like, where do you begin in this game, basically? Well, this is a very difficult game. And they answered it. And I believe the Nintendo Power kind of gave a very general high overview about like, this character goes this way, this character goes this way, like that type of thing. Because like, again, some of these things were impossible to know just from having the game. And I don't even think with that one, it was in the manual, because that was a translation of what was essentially a very Japanese game. And I want to say it was like the third game in a series. Like, it was one of those things where like, we finally got it like three games into it. You know, you kind of had to have the Nintendo Power to help walk you through, like almost like in Star Tropics, you had to have the paper to give you the code or you were stuck. But that, of course, we all know was that was Nintendo's war on the rental industry. But, you know, still something that reminded me about how important tangible media used to be.
Yeah.
On a week where you're talking about how more tangible media, as in the games themselves, are going away.
Now, the good thing about is that the Video Game History Foundation, it's text searchable. They actually have all of this stuff you can search by text. So you can actually search for your question and it will tell you, or maybe just search for the game name.
Legacy. I can't imagine Legacy of the Wizard was printed that much.
Yeah, so you could go through and be like, okay, this issue, and then you can find it. So
yeah, that'd be awesome.
Which is that something the Internet Archive doesn't do. So like the Internet Archive, they have the Nintendo powers. You can flip through them, but I don't think they've got like text searchable stuff because it's archiving it, whereas the Video Game History Foundation is trying to be like a proper library where research people can go in and do research, but anybody can do research. You don't have to be in academics to be able to do that.
You know what I think might be fun to go back and revisit would be some of the old like Compute Gazette magazines. I think you and I've talked about this with the programs in the back, and maybe kind of reapproaching some of those now that I'm an adult, because as a kid, a lot of the programming tricks and stuff, like very limited amount of that stuff made sense to me.
Yeah.
Like it was like, I would know the peek and poke numbers to do different things on the screen, but like memorizing them, right?
Yeah.
I probably can understand better as an adult, like where some of that actually comes from, you know, that it's, you know, poking different elements of the memory or, you know, things like that. I just, you know, and how the machine language assembler like really works and things like that on the Commodore. I feel like I could read more of those like technical dives and actually understand it, whereas a kid I couldn't.
Yeah,
you know,
we all knew like, okay, poke 52380 was the border and 52381 was the inside part, and we remember that, but like we didn't understand
64738, the soft reset.
Yeah, I think that was the soft reset, and then 4096 was like starting whatever assembler language program was loaded into memory or something like that. But it was, because like when I was a kid, you know, I did all that stuff. But it turns out, speaking of finding things in your parents' attic, my dad had a whole bunch of books about like Commodore 64 architecture and Commodore 64 assembly language, and literally like good dives on how this works, including like writing games in assembly language, like something like geared towards kids for assembly language, but it was never exposed to me. And so going in, and especially because I've got Commodore 64s, and I'm hoping this year I'm going to try to get at least one working, because I have like six Commodore 64s and each one have a different problem. And I've got somebody local who's willing to be like, I'm like, I'll give you six Commodore 64s. Can I have one working one and you can keep all the others for spare parts? And he's like, yes, I will do that. Give me a call. And have I called him yet? No, but I have his name and number already. But getting that, or also I've got the C64 Maxi, which is an emulated Commodore 64, and you can do stuff on that as well. But if I had infinite time, that's what I would do, is actually go through the stuff I should have done as a kid and learn more about how the Commodore 64 works. Because now peeking and poking and data and all that stuff makes much more sense, because I started reading them some of those books as an adult.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
And and what you will also find is what's interesting, because I have a lot of those Compute Gazettes and I kept the Run magazines because I found a lot of those as well. And you can find, if you don't really want to type in like the MLX stuff, which was the machine language, like all the numbers and stuff, you can find online the disk images. So if you don't actually want to type it in yourself, especially if it's MLX and it's just hex numbers, that's not fun. It's not like BASIC where you're like, I understand what it's trying to do here. I'm learning what it's doing. You don't understand what the hex numbers are doing. But you can get the disk image that has the game already, you know, and they'll even like fix it, because sometimes there were errors in the code and, you know.
It's funny.
Yeah. So, what else are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio tonight?
Well, we'll talk a little bit about Xbox, because Xbox had their developer direct and they dropped a surprise on us, which was really cool, and also announced a new game in the same series coming out a little later. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We have some dates for some anticipated games as well. That I think it was called Expedition 33.
Yes.
The game looks really good. I believe that has an April date. So
April 12th.
Sooner than I thought, actually. I don't know why I assumed when that game was first talked about, it was like 2 years away. So it's actually kind of exciting that it's coming out pretty soon. And we'll talk about a very large apology from Marvel Snap, who got caught up in the TikTok downtime. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And actually, we'll take on a little bit of a controversial topic with Final Fantasy 14. Does a user mod enable people to stalk people in that game? We're going to try to get down to the bottom of this and what that all actually means tonight on OLR with all of you.
And also, while we're both here, let's just both also, I want to give a happy birthday to one of the other podcasts that's been around for a long, long time. Gamertag Radio just celebrated their 20th anniversary.
That's
so
amazing.
And they had Phil Spencer on. And so obviously they've gotten Phil Spencer to say a lot of things that have made the gaming round. So maybe one or two of your stories tonight may or may not have a Gamertag Radio quote in it. But congrats to them on their 20th anniversary. That's Danny and Paris and Pete who are on there now do a lot of great work over there. And they've been friends to us for a long time. Really nice to us here at VOG. So congratulations, Gamertag Radio, on your 20th birthday.
And I think the two of us know it takes a lot of work to go for 20 years. Yep. You're almost there. Yeah, it's no small, small feat, that's for sure. So congrats.
All right. Orange Sound Radio is up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly. I will not be here in 2 weeks because there is an event that happens on television where we all get commercialized and capitalized too. And it is the only time a year I get to see certain people. And so it happens on a Sunday night. And I go and I hang out with them on a Sunday night because I will not. I only see them once a year, and it's always the same Sunday night in February. Orange Sound Radio will still be here that night. So if you don't care about that stuff, then you will still have content on that night here at the Voice of Geeks Network. But I will not be here in 2 weeks. But next week, we're going to do this again. We're going to talk about video games. We're going to talk about the industry. And maybe I'll have actually played a video game, and maybe I will, you know, talk about how the cats destroyed this, the kittens destroyed this office the minute they got into it. So you can find us on social media. I am at BobbyBlackWolf.com, where the skies are blue. That is mainly where I post now, but you can find me at Bobby Blackwolf other places where I don't post as much. Or you can find me on our Discord server, VogNetwork.com/Discord. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet, but we would not be able to make all of this work without the help of the chatters who go above and beyond, going way more than we expect. You know, you being here is really all we ask. But people who do subscribe and give bits to the channel, we like to shout out at the end of the show. So, you know, thank you so much for being here. Thank you, Orange Wright, for resubscribing. Thank you so much. And thank you, Loki OLR, for subscribing. Also, we had some new follows. I remember them from the Stream Atlanta event from the other night. So thank you so much for following. And hope you enjoyed the show tonight. There was a big networking event at a small film studio here in Atlanta. I got to meet a lot of other content creators from the Southeast, not just from the Atlanta area. Some people came in from quite a ways, and it was a great time. So had some Mexican, and it was fun. So awesome. Thank you so much. I'm going to hit the button. Where's the button? Where's the button that plays music? That's the button that plays music. So now I have 10 seconds left to say goodbye, but thank you so much for being here. Thank you for indulging me in the kitties, and I'll see you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.